Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our panel of experts as we look ahead to the Wyndham Championship from Sedgefield Country Club in North Carolina, the final event of the PGA Tour's regular season. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners age 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce a couple of fantastic experts, tipsters, whatever you want to call them. They are both freelance golf writers at many publications, including The Guardian. So you know they are good and clever. We've got Dave Tindall and Matt Cooper joining us. Welcome, gents. Let's get straight into last week and the 3M Open. How did you go?
Well, I didn't go so well. So I don't know if Matt's got anything better than I have.
I did absolutely terribly. I was also on a little bit of a sort of downer from the Open. Mm. It had been such a hectic week at Royal Liverpool, and I was quite looking forward to a bit of a week of slightly relaxed punting. Is probably the best way of putting it.
Yeah, absolutely. There was also a bit of Challenge Tour action, wasn't there, in Ireland? And Matt, you had a little go there, I believe.
Yeah, I was very lucky at Royal Liverpool. I met Brandon Robinson-Thompson, who's been in exceptional form over the last few months on all sorts of minor tours. I got chatting to him and his Source Army, which is the name of all his fans that followed him around. And he got quite a set of new fans as well in Hoylake, because he's quite street for golf. And also, he's just like a very, very good golfer. And I just got like really good vibes when I was talking to him. He was very confident. He was having a really, really good time, never stopped smiling. And I just had a really funny feeling that he was going to do well when he went over to Ireland, not least because he actually won in Ireland early this year on one of the minor tours. So yeah, I backed him at 60-1 and he did me proud.
He absolutely did. He is quite street. He did I saw on the Challenge Tour Twitter after six holes, I think he birdied to get a two-shot lead. And it was great. I also love the minor tours. It sounds very mythical that he's doing really well on minor tours overall, but one to look out for. On is the end of his suffix to every name, Brandon.
He sounds more street than Anthony Worrell Thompson anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah, slightly more so. Well, there you go. There wasn't too much luck on the side for the Tips podcast either. And I'm not trying to get your job, but I had Lee Hodges. So I am absolutely ear to ear only. And I've got to thank Tom Jacobs for this, who's put him on my radar a few weeks ago. He tipped him up, I think only top 20 an event a few weeks ago. And that came through, and it was course form. I think at the Honda was mentioned last week, and there it came. I think he had a top 10 there. And what an impressive finish that was from Lee Hodges.
Very good. It's a weird time, isn't it, for golf? A six-shot win for Brian Harman in the Open, seven shots for Lee Hodges. It, to me, sounds like an actor from California who starred in a series of Westerns.
Well, I tell you what's really quite remarkable about him. It might have changed over the last few days, but he had no Wikipedia page. And I genuinely reckon he must be the first winner on the PGA Tour for a long, long time with no Wikipedia page. There were just two random footballers who'd played for like Torquay or something. Bizarre that they're two footballers. But yeah, hopefully somebody has thought he's deserving of getting on Wikipedia now.
Absolutely. And if not, we'll be doing it straight away, getting on it. I don't know much about him apart from he's with his school sweetheart, the commentators kept saying, and JT Poston went to try catch him and hit it straight in the water. But yeah, it was a very impressive wire-to-wire win for Lee Hodges at the 3M Open. But it's now moved on to the Wyndham Championship on the PGA Tour, and we're going to look at that right now. Yes, that's right. It's time to head to North Carolina, where we find Sedgefield Country Club, which has been the permanent home for the Wyndham Championship since 2008. There's been some illustrious winners here at some nice odds. And actually, looking through the scores, it's remarkable. Apart from last year, every year from 2016 until then, the winning score was either 21 under or 22 under, which is very, very consistent. And then Tom Kim broke that last year with 20 under. He has actually withdrawn this year with an injury, but there are some fellow South Koreans in Sung Jae Im who in the field, and then American John Hutt as well, who he beat out last year. So let's start with you, Dave. What can you tell us about Sedgefield Country Club, and why is it so low scoring?
Yeah. Donald Ross design. It's one of these where I think certain players who don't bomb the ball a mile sort of go, yes, this gives us a chance to be on that leaderboard. And I think it's a sort of course horse type of event for me. A lot of the same names pop up. So you've got even someone like Davis Love. Do you remember Davis Love has won it three times? I think the third of those, he was 51 or something like that? And so he can keep going back there and playing well. Brant Snedeker's won it twice, one shot 59 there. So I think if you look at old leaderboards in this event, it's quite a good clue to what might happen. And as well, a personal thing, Wyndham. I went to Wyndham School, there you go, where my parents were teachers and they've come to stay with me. So there, actually, all the signs are for me to pick the winner this week. So we'll see.
Real shame, though, Wyndham Clark, isn't there? I don't
think yeah.
That would be perfect, wouldn't it? It really would.
Oh, that writes itself. Absolutely writes itself. But there are some great names in this field. And as I said about some of those winners, looking there, Jim Herman went off at 600-1 when he won in 2020. So that would be nice. And knowing Matt, there'll be a story there and hopefully pick at bigger odds this week. But Matt, actually, in my research, past course form, as mentioned there by Dave, is more relevant here than at 85.5% of other PGA Tour courses, is what I've come out from. Mr. Mike Miller has thrown that out, actually, who does some very good golf statistical spreadsheets for free. Is that something you've really focused and honed in on, or have you gone more the statistical side when you do your previews?
That's a staggering stat. I'd love to know how he put that together. And that sounds like I'm questioning what he's saying. That's not the case at all. I'd just love to know how he does it. Yes, like Dave, I think this is real horses for courses event. But also, there's actually a couple of other courses that are also quite a good fit. So down the years, it's been quite well known that people who win at Sawgrass have quite a handy ability at winning Sedgefield as well. So there's a bit of a Sedgefield Sawgrass double up there. Davis Love, Sergio Garcia, Webb Simpson are standouts in that. And also, I'm quite big on in recent years Detroit, which is another Donald Ross course that has been played a few weeks before in the summer. Last year, actually, the week before, and as a consequence, actually, last year an awful lot of people finished top 20 in both of those events. So I think there's quite a lot of links between those two. And as you'll see when I get chatting about my picks, I've mentioned that quite a lot. I've got a story for you, Ollie, that's not about Jim Herman, but it is about a past winner of this competition, Ted Potter. And I once
junior,
went
to, not senior. Yeah.
Yes, Ted Potter Jr. I once saw him out on the course at the Open one year and got chatting to his wife and happened to mention that I always found his swing quite extraordinary because it always looked to me like he was wearing deep sea divers boots and that his feet seemed enormous and really heavy. And I mentioned this to her and she thought it was really, really funny and was delighted with it. But his form just went so south afterwards, and I spent quite a considerable amount of time thinking that she told him this stupid line and that he spent all his time swinging thinking about his damn deep sea divers boots on his feet, and it was all my fault that his form had just disappeared.
Oh gosh, this could be a weekly update of like, whose career have you ended by speaking to?
I think it's something that anybody who talks to a golfer should be really careful about what they say. For a long time, when I first was in this business, I used to do quite a lot of women's golf, and I used to be terrified talking to golfers ahead of the final round because I thought if I say the wrong thing to them, they're just going to be thinking about the idiotic thing that man said to them before they went out to try and win an event and change their life. And somehow I'd sort of said something like, yeah, because you know what happens when you play your own golf. If you say to a mate, oh, I've been putting brilliantly today, you can just guarantee that he starts putting like an idiot. And it's like I don't see no reason why the same thing shouldn't happen with professional golfers.
Could it not work the other way, though? You could say something that inspires them beyond belief.
Yes. Yeah, that's very nice. I'm normally looking on the positive side of life. And yeah, I've been guilty the other way there. Yeah, quite right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, the opposite of the commentator's curse. I think people may be asking where you were about 3 months ago if it was near Justin Thomas's house, but we'll find out, or any of his members at the moment. He, of course, is in the field this week and his odds continue to go out. I'll tell you who else is in the field this week, Dave. It's both Ryder Cup captains, which is very exciting. And we're going to touch on that. You would have heard last week spoke about some wild cards. We're going to get into yours as well. But do you think they use these events deliberately, playing them to really have a close eye on some of the players who are in contention and start those conversations? Because it's really not far away now.
Yeah, I think so. I think they like to just pick up the vibe of what's going on and what better place to be than actually playing in the tournament itself. I seem to remember one year, Tom Lehman, was it Tom Lehman almost won the event he was playing when he was meant to just be looking around. It's almost like they've got so little pressure on them in terms of their own golf and their own expectations that they can just freewheel it a little bit. So I've been kind of looking at that. I've got a funny feeling at some point maybe Luke Donald will be a first round leader or something like that. Just because, you know, there's nothing on him. Everyone thinks he's just there to just sort of look and be inside the, literally be inside the ropes. So yeah, but I think it does make sense for him to have a look and just pick up general little bits that you wouldn't get if you were back home. So just maybe to get a feel on someone like Justin Thomas, you know, what's his body language? What are other people saying? How's he coming across? So yeah, definitely makes sense.
Yeah, right. And I mean, if there's a course that you're saying that, you know, it's not a premium length, that is Luke Donald to a T. So absolutely right. And he will be a healthy, just looking here, he's a healthy 200-1 for first round leader. Just so you know, just throwing that out there. If it happens, I think even mentioned last time, Padraig Harrington, someone said that if you win, because he was in contention, I thought if he was more like, are you going to pick yourself? And he's the sort of person that might have actually, and maybe he would have done all right in Whistling Straits. Okay, let's have a look at the field in detail now and the top of the market. So there we have Hideki Matsuyama at 20s, along with Sung Jae Im, Russell Henley at 22s, Sam Burns, who's been popular on Twitter, at 25s, along with Siwoo Kim. And then we got Denny McCarthy, the putting god, which is very important here. It has been over the last few editions at 30. And then we get into some potential Ryder Cup, Shane Lowry at 33s, JT Poston, the runner-up last week. Joint runner-up after falling over the finish line, also at 33s. And then two other potential Ryder Cuppers in Justin Thomas at 35s and Ludvig Åberg as well. So there's your top 10 overall. But let's get into what you guys looked at, especially on the statistical side, as mentioned, putting there. And I know Tom Kim last year started with a quad bogey before finishing with a 61 to finish on the final day. He was all time on the greens. So let's hear what you guys have looked at. Matt, starting with you, who's your first of two outrights?
Yeah, I've gone with Taylor Moore to kick off. He's already a winner this year at Innisbrook, which isn't a million miles away in terms of the test. Both Bermuda greens, both quite sort of undulating courses with elevation changes. Both sort of small greens, so you're sort of if you hit the greens, you know, you're going to have a half decent look at a birdie. He was very impressive in winning that, and then I just kind of like the fact that he was fifth on his debut, having made a bit of a slow start. I mentioned Detroit is also a Donald Ross track. There's quite nice links with this week. He's finished sixth and fourth when he's played there, and he did the latter of those this year. Harbour Town's another course where, you know, you hit steady shots off the tee, and then you got a lot of wedges into small greens. He was 11th there, and he was fourth with 18 holes to play. And I also mentioned that Sawgrass, there's a bit of a link there. He hasn't played Sawgrass very often, but he did get a 65 in round three this week. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to like about Taylor Moore. I mean, against all that good stuff, he's had a couple of missed cuts, but this is his kind of test. And the thing I really like about him is that he's really nice price. You know, you can get him at 50-1, so I think that's a cracking price for him.
Yeah, I agree with what Matt says there. My best tip, we've mentioned him a little bit so far, is JT Poston. I know he sort of messed up on the last hole last week, but, you know, what? I think something like that will only make him just more determined this week. And I think this is a good week for him. I mentioned before about Davis Love and Brant Snedeker winning this event more than once. So JT Poston won this in 2019 with a final round 62, which was some going. And he's just come, he's been in great form, hasn't he? He's second last week, obviously. Made the cut at the Open. And then before that, he was sixth back-to-back in the John Deere and the Scottish Open. So quite a versatile game he's got there. And the six at the John Deere isn't worth noting because that's the other event he's won as well as this one. So clearly when you see someone who's won an event and then they play well in it again, you think, course horse sort of figure. So I think now he's, you know, now he's back here and he's got a win under his belt, I think he can come here again and play really well. I think Ollie mentioned putting. I added it up. I think he's gained just under 20 strokes on the greens across his last four events. So the putter is really nice and hot. So that's good as well. He's got good numbers in tee to green and approach last week. And then the other little thing with FedEx Cup rankings, he's 48, which is 48th or 49th, which is great. And he's safe for next week. But then if he's thinking ahead, only the top 50 go forward to the next one, the second one. So he needs to just sort of consolidate his position and have another nice week, because they all want to get in that top 30, don't they, to go forward to Eastlake. So, yeah, I was quite pleasantly surprised that someone in such good form, I mean, 6-6, I think 41st, second for his form. So he's bagged the each-way money three times in his last four events. If you added a filter as don't include a major, then it's the last three events, isn't it? So I thought 33-1 on JT Poston was a pretty good price.
Yeah, I also think that business of the sort of boom or bust shot that he played on the last week, I think that can only be a positive. And especially, I suspect, because he'll probably become aware that it became a bit of a hot topic on Twitter. Lots of people telling him off for doing a stupid thing, which is really quite extraordinary, because it's like, I remember years ago, Tim Clark needed a birdie on the final hole of what is now the American Express. At the time, he was like, I think he was like leading the par five birdie rankings or something, and he laid up to a green that had a pond in front of it, and loads of people had a real go at him, and it's like they even said, what's he doing, he's second in par five birdies, what's he doing? It's like they seem to miss the point that this if anybody knows how to make a birdie on a par five, we've got the proof that Tim Clark is that man, and he's decided that on that occasion going for the green in two was not what he needed to do. So they have a go at him for being conservative. They have a go at Poston for being aggressive. As a professional golfer, you're probably thinking, I can't win here. And actually all he needs to do is just, it could give him a little bit of an edge and think, you know, I'm gonna kick on this time and show those guys.
It's like when Zach Johnson won the Masters, he just laid up all the time on the par fives and wasn't he topping par five scoring. So, you know, why play someone else's idea of how you should play a par five?
Yes, yes. In actual fact, well, it's interesting you say that. Why do somebody else's strategy? This is a subject I'll bring up when we discuss Ryder Cup picks later on, actually. So it's a big thing. I think if all you're doing is making decisions based on what somebody else might do, that's your main error. You know, the minute you stop doing what you think yourself should do, you're in trouble.
Yeah, control the controllables has been bandied around a fair bit. And it was a hanging lie from JT Poston, but he only just missed the rock. The real shame was it didn't stay on the 3M sign, because it did bounce on there. And what would, like, he could have had to play it off there. But at the end of the day, he left himself, I think, with a chip at 115 yards. You'd need 90% of the time get down in three, and he left that short and two putts. So he was unlucky, but I think you're right. The confidence he must have is great if you're going to back him. And for a past winner here, very nice odds there. So that was 2 points each way from you, Dave, wasn't it there? And just 1 point each way on Taylor Moore from Matt, who now you can give us your second outright before we find your three additional picks.
Yeah, I'm really keen on this second one. And again, I was quite pleasantly surprised about his price. And that's another Taylor Pendrith. Yeah, I seem to say, I'm not sure I've ever had a double Taylor.
Are you going for with your third pick, Taylor Swift?
Brilliant. Yeah, of course, Taylor Swift does have a link with golf, of course, because she in, I can't remember, what video is it where she attacks her boyfriend's car with a golf club?
Yes.
Blank space, yes. I had a blank space until I remembered it. Yeah, I'm very fond of that. So I'm very fond of that video. Yeah, but back to reality. Yeah, Taylor Pendrith, he was 13th last year after quite a poor start. Again, I'm going on that Detroit thing. He's been second and 14th there. Interestingly, he was leading at halfway in one of them, and he led through 18, 36 and 54 holes in the other one. So he really does like Donald Ross courses. Again, I've suggested Sawgrass, and although he hasn't finished either of his performances at TPC Sawgrass off very well, he was in the top 10 through 36 holes in both of them. And then the sort of the clincher for me is that after all of that, he's actually 80-1, which seems like an enormous price for a fellow who was good enough to get in the President's Cup this time last year, albeit slightly controversially, but he did do it.
I like him as well. I've backed him a few times this year. I feel he's got something big in him coming soon. But we're talking about big prices. We all have a narrative, don't we? We all have a narrative in golf, and I know Matt does. And obviously one of the ones this week is someone who is outside the top 70 who qualify for the FedEx Cup, bursting through with a late run. It's a tricky one, isn't it? When people do it, we sort of show it as a shining example. Look, they had this motivation, and then we ignore the 20 fellas who had the same motivation who crashed and burned. But in terms of if you break it down to someone who's been there and done that, Chesson Hadley has been in this position the last 2 years and has come through. So in 2021, he was really struggling going into the final day. I mean, I think he needed to finish about 15th, but he was nowhere near coming into the final day. Shot 62, and it was ridiculous. I think he went out in 29. He had a hole in one. It was just sort of magic is happening around him. And he got the last spot, the 125th, what it used to be, last spot. So he did that 2 years ago, was 15th. Then last year, I think he was like maybe like one place inside the number, but he still had to have a decent week to stop people overtaking him. And again, he came through on the last day, shot 64, finished 8th. So here's a guy who went under the gun in this event. He's a North Carolina boy, which may help explain the kind of added motivation and inspiration he takes. And I've been following him for a few weeks in terms of just noticing his games picked up. So I think he was 6 at halfway in Canada after leading in round 1. He was 6 at the Barracuda a couple of weeks ago, 27th last week. So Chesson Hadley, I think he's close. His numbers, you look at his stats, they're starting to turn around. He's always puts well, but his iron game is a lot more dialed in at the minute. So just that idea. And maybe Matt should fly out there and tell him, just remind him that, you know, you always do well here. Hopefully it won't go the other way. You've always come through at the end and produced something magic. So after 15th and 8th, when he's had to do something, maybe we'll push on. And he's massive odds. I'm really quite surprised. You scroll down the odds and you think, don't appear yet because I don't want 60, I don't want 80, I don't want 90. And I'm still going. And there he is, 125-1. So I think that's a really big price on someone with the motivation to repeat what he's done before in North Carolina, where he's born and bred, and he's coming into good form.
I tell you what I like about him, Ollie, and that's that Dave was mentioning that narrative. I think sometimes we often forget that golfers achieve things not just because of what they do themselves, but also because of things that happen elsewhere. And I think Justin Rose missed a 5-foot putt last year that enabled Chesson Hadley to finish in that top 125. And it seems really obvious when you see it in those circumstances, because Rose did it on the last green or whatever. But of course, you need all those things to happen. And often they might happen earlier on. You know, I can remember somebody won, and it was as a consequence of somebody making a double bogey on the last. And I can remember this fella said, you know, things like that have to happen every week for anybody to win. You know, like one of the favourites made a double bogey in the first round, and everyone notices it, but they don't think about it at the end of the week. You need odd things to happen around the course to other people in order for somebody to step up and win. And that was like quite a clear example, but a nice little reminder that, you know, there's 156 narratives in golf. I can remember I once said to a fella trying to compare football and golf, and I said, well, football's very simple. It's a single narrative, and golf's a multiple narrative tale of 156 stories. And he said to me, I don't know what you're talking about, mate, but it sounds clever. So you might have been right without your introduction to us, Ollie.
Yeah, very, very clever. I agree. I remember stepping into the director's booth at the Ryder Cup in Paris and going, if you're directing a football game, one ball, wide shot, goal. This is singles. There's 12 matches that are going on. You need to be at the right camera, at the right place, for where the winning putt goes, it's absolutely remarkable. And there's so many narratives at all times to keep up with. And I also like the idea that Matt's flying out to tell Chesson Hadley his feet look thin. And that will really help him get the win. But he, Dave, people believe in you. He's still triple figures, but he's down to 100-1. That was a point each way on him. And Taylor Pendrith is still 90-1, William Hill, 8 places. And that was also a point from Matt Cooper. Now, obviously in your previews, you have more than 2 outright picks. There are some bonus extras. You know, there's 154, 156 players. So we've got 3 for each of you. And they're just a little bit on them and why they're getting a mention. So Matt, who are you going to throw up as a little bonus picks?
Yeah, I like the Aussie Cam Davis, who's he's been a winner at Detroit. He closed last time he was at this particular course with 365s. I like Chris Kirk, who's a winner this year, and he's 10 for 10 on his last 10 visits to Ross courses. And Aaron Rye, the Englishman from Wolverhampton, top 10 at Detroit, a big favourite of mine with his 2 black gloves on his hands. He's like the Boston Strangler. No, that sounds a terrible thing to say. He's an absolutely lovely man, and his family's lovely. I'm from Wolverhampton as well. I'm very, very fond of him.
Great, fantastic. So we've got Cam Davis there, 35-1, Chris Kirk's 50-1, and Aaron Rye, not the Boston Strangler, at 40-1, the lovely Wolverhampton man there, I believe. Perfect. Dave Tindall, what 3 names are you going to throw in as well to keep an eye on?
Yeah, you could have called him out. If he was playing at TPC Boston, that would have lessened the accusation a little bit. We're talking about course form. We look at those at the front end, Russell Henley. Course form of 5, 7, and 9 the last 3 years, so he's loves this place. Load of top 20s this year, 4th at Augusta, so he's clearly got good credentials. I looked at Eric Cole, who seems to play 3 PGA Tour events every week. It's just ridiculous, but he's had some really good finishes. 2nd at Honda, 5th at Mexico, 6th in Canada. He thinks somehow he deserves a win just for playing loads. he's clearly good as well. I'm a bit of a I don't know if it'll be like a one-off season or we'll see more of him. Brendan Todd was the other one. He was 2nd at the John Deere a couple of starts ago, 8th at Wells Fargo, another North Carolina event this year, 2nd at Pebble Beach, knows how to win. I thought he was quite big odds at 80-1.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, we can't have an event where putting's important and not mention Russell Henley. That's like 101 golf betting, isn't it? So could see him there at 22-1. Yeah, Brendan Todd at 80s and Eric Cole 60-1 as well for him. So there's some extra names to keep an eye on. That is a very in-depth preview and plenty of good names in the Wyndham Championship. Before we move on to the Ryder Cup, it is now time for a quick game of Who Am I? We all know this game. If you're only joining the podcast now, 1, why are you so late? But 2, how it happens is I will give a name, someone I think is going to go well this week. I didn't do Lee Hodges last week, but he was there, but there wasn't just enough stats about him. Anyway, I'm fine. Let's not mention it. And you're going to put your hands up and guess. You don't have to guess after each time, but let's see how we go. Okay, we're going to get into this. My first thing about me. I am a real estate enthusiast. When I finish playing, I want to get into flipping houses. Do we have any guesses on that?
Keith Mitchell.
No.
Brant Snedeker?
No, we move on. I was the first player to hit all 18 greens in reg during a US Open.
Really, ever?
That's what his website says.
I reckon someone else did.
I don't know that. That's
no. That's okay. Good. No, we like that. Okay. I've never won a major, but my caddy has with a different player, and it was. I can't give the year, obviously, but it was the event he hit all 18 greens at the US Open, which is just by chance I stumbled across that.
Oh wow! You've got me stumped this week.
Yeah,
it's got to be a straight hitter, obviously, which narrows it down.
I'm totally stumped.
Okay, no. That's good. That's fine. We're moving on to I've earned just under $35 million on the PGA Tour. Day-to-day podcast listeners, if we're not showing the video of that, flabbergasted. Obviously, multiple time winner with 35 mil. Matt Cooper.
Webb Simpson.
is not.
He's won the major, though, hasn't he?
Ah, yeah.
The old Birdman, remember?
Yes. Whatever happened to him?
Oh, glad he's on next week. Not Webb. Anything for you, Dave Tindall?
What was that last clue? He's won 35 million. Blimey.
Okay, the last one, you should get it now then. I am a huge lover of Florida, West Ham United, and Polo Ralph Lauren at the same time. Say it together.
Billy Horschel.
Yeah, well done. VAR. And I think Matt's hand just up first, but Billy, that'll be a great video. Both your hands going up. Billy Horschel is correct on that. I don't know about the 18 Greens US Open, but it's on his website. And if he lies, that is odd. But it was, of course, Fuch is caddying who did it with Justin Rose at Merion. 2013.
Yeah. I don't want to dent Billy's pride, but hitting 18 greens in regulation in a US Open, he just needs to get one more top 50 in a major would be a good start, because I think his very first major as a pro was like tied fourth or something, and for some bizarre reason he just can't do anything at the majors ever since. Very sort of bizarre.
Absolutely right. That was his best finish. Still tied fourth. Very good. You knew that, but didn't know about his real estate. That's fine. Absolutely fine.
We have to wait till he supports West Ham before we got it.
That was genuinely the Hammers was where it came up. But there you go. Billy Horschel was Who Am I? And now it's time to get into some Ryder Cup chat and talk about the wild cards. Yes, we have a very full mailbag. You guys reached out on Twitter to speak to the common man and woman and find out what they want to know about the Ryder Cup. And we did this last week with Ben Coley and Niall Lyons. First question we have is for you, Matt, to start with, and it's from Inside Fighter Boxing. So there you go. They write a blog on boxing and also like their golf, and they want to know, we've touched a bit on this, but how does the FedEx Cup standings come into your thoughts at this stage with the Ryder Cup, those around that crucial 70th mark? Is it something that enters the calculations and is seriously considered? So he's given an example here of Shane Lowry. He's in okay but not spectacular form, sitting 76th, and he needs a strong week. That is obviously talking about this event, but also confidence going into the Ryder Cup, because you want to keep playing and getting in good form, or he might have to come over and play in some of the European events. So what do you think on that?
I think it's a very intriguing possibility for Shane Lowry. So if he doesn't have a good week this week, he won't be playing in the FedEx Cup in the next 3 weeks. And so, as you say, he may think he has to come back and play a few DP World Tour events ahead of the Ryder Cup. I think it's widely perceived that he is going to get a pick. I think there's eight solid players that people believe Luke Donald will have on his side, and Shane is one of them. And it's interesting because he actually has quite a terrible match play record, which doesn't seem to make a great deal of sense. And sometimes these things can be quirky. And we've just mentioned Billy Horschel having quite a long-term problem in the majors. His is long enough for it to be a bit of a problem. But I think with Shane Lowry, I think the fact that he's not done very well in match play, specifically in the Ryder Cup, and also he struggled a bit in the Hero Cup at the start of the year, I think it's more than likely that he'll turn that round eventually. So I think Luke Donald would be a bit worried that Shane's not performed brilliantly this year. But it's also a bit strange. He's tee to green. He's been fantastic this year. He had a cold putter, and then he found a hot putter, and his tee to green game left him a little bit. So all the ingredients are there. He just needs to put them together. So I think there'd be a bit concern. I think the greater concern would be Zach Johnson, worried that Justin Thomas is outside the top 70, because he really does look a little bit bereft of form and hope. So that would be a bigger concern for Zach Johnson than for Luke Donald and Shane Lowry.
Yeah, and putting it in the Ryder Cup context, Shane Lowry is 100-1 on to be there, and Justin Thomas is 5-4. So slightly different in the markets overall. Dave, your one was a two-parter. I'll get you to answer the first, and then we'll get both your thoughts on the second, which is a great question. It's come in from Foxington 85, David. I'm going to guess Foxington, who was born in 1985, I'm going to guess. He says, what type of player does Marco Simone suit? And do you think that will really influence the captain's picks?
Well, it should, shouldn't it? I mean, I've read things. It's a very modern course in the same way, like Celtic Manor or even the Golf Nacional. And you kind of think, from one point of view, it's going to suit the Americans because it's a big modern course that suits big driving. But what you've got to remember is the Europeans will know exactly that. So I think they will try and negate some of that. That's what we saw at the Golf Nacional. They grew the rough in and they want to make it as, you know, they want to sort of do the kryptonite to the Americans' big driving. So even if this was like a normal week, you say, oh, Golf Simone, Marco Simone, you want a big hitter. For the Ryder Cup, you just got to think, I'm not so sure. So although the Americans will want it to play like, you know, it has played on the DP World Tour, I just wonder if it will. And if that's the case, then do you then look at someone who can hit the fairway a little bit more than you might think? And that would certainly alter tactics and selection policy, because, as I say, it's one thing looking at it in a normal week. It's one thing thinking what it might be in that specific week.
Yeah, I'm personally always surprised that it depends on diaries, of course, that more Americans don't come over and look at the course. We saw Justin Thomas in 2018, I think, was the only one. I'm looking here at the list. And currently, if you wanted to pick an American who played, you've got, well, Sean Crocker, who's also obviously Zimbabwean background, and John Catlin as the wild card picks, so who made the cut. So seems unlikely that either will be featuring. The second part of the question, which I'll come to you first, Matt, and I know this really interested you, was why do you think there's a bunch of players who made one Ryder Cup appearances but never really kicked on and solidified their place? And he's sort of mentioned Cabrera Bello, Coulthard, Thomas Peters, obviously Olesen, Andy Sullivan, Norren. There's plenty of names there. What is it for you?
Well, what I'm going to say, it sounds like a bit of a fudge, because I'm not entirely sure what it is that has sort of stalled the progress of so many of those players. But what I would say is this, is that it was always going to be the case ahead of this Ryder Cup that the sort of golden generation that are in their 40s were the likes of Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, Henrik Stenson, Donald himself, Paul Casey, Martin Keimer, who's just shy of 40, but in that kind of bracket. They have been responsible for Europe's success for the last 20 years. It's also the case that from guys from about 32 and younger, we've got a lot of promising golfers. But it's also been the case that the people who are between, they're almost like a lost generation. And they are all those names that you've just mentioned. And they've had a look at the Ryder Cup and then they've not quite kicked on and become multiple performers in the Ryder Cup. And they should be the people who are kind of like the base of this particular team, and they're kind of lacking. And it's one of the reasons why we're a little bit reliant on rookies coming into Rome. And so it's a bit of a fudge. I'm not quite sure what that is. I mean, to take something like Rafa Cabrera Bello, he was a multiple winner in Europe, went over to America, got a bit lost there, has come back and has threatened to do a bit of stuff, never quite has. And it's quite a common tale amongst those players. Thomas Peters is another classic one. And actually, strangely, he was in really, really good nick at the start of this year and looked like he was all set to get back in the Ryder Cup reckoning before he chose another route. It's a strange one. I'm not entirely sure what it is, but I'm very much aware that Europe's Ryder Cup team does have this gap, and it's a generational gap at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, keeping it relevant, it's somewhat reminiscent of the England cricket team, I find, at the moment, with they've had these great stable bit, and with like for the Broad, Anderson stuff, but there has been a gap filling in other bits, and it's going to be a really interesting time for Europe to find out, you know, other people stepping up, and there are plenty of names who can possibly do that. So let's actually look at them. I think, as we mentioned, the locks are in there, aren't they? Let's look at Europe first. We've got your Rahms, your McIlroys, your Fleetwoods, your Hovlands, your Hattons, your Fitzpatricks, your Lowrys, all of those names. Then we last week got added a couple. So how this works is each time we ask and see who you guys like to look on. Ben Coley put in Nikolai Højgaard, and Niall Lyons went with Seamus Power to be added to Team Europe. Seamus is 11-4 on for to be picked, and Nikolai is 2-1 to be the wild card. So let's see who you guys throw in, Dave, starting with you. Who can you see getting a spot for Europe?
Well, yeah, in terms of who I see getting the spot in terms of the value, Ben's mentioned Nikolai Højgaard. I'm going to make the case for Rasmus Højgaard. again, I sometimes am guilty of just seeing them as one sort of being, but looking at his individual sort of merit here, I know Nicolai's won at this course, but Rasmus is okay. He's 18th, 27th, 47th, which is decent enough. He doesn't hit the ball as far as his twin, but he's a better putter. Rasmus is 9th in strokes gained putting this season. Nicolai, I think, nearly 100th, something like that. He's just got this special air about him, Rasmus Højgaard. He's won 4 times on the European Tour. I mean, that's a career's worth of wins, isn't it, for maybe some of these players that you've just said haven't kicked on and made more than one appearance. 4 wins already, and that's double the amount of Nicolai. And 3 of them came in playoffs. So in terms of like having guts and when it's on the line, Rasmus, I just think he's got something special about him. We saw the one in Denmark recently, that huge pressure on him to do that in front of his home fans. You know, he's trying to shake off Elvira. He has to hold a couple of putts to stay alive, and he does so. So I just think there's so much going for him. He won the Eisenhower Trophy with Denmark. Now, maybe not as much reported. He played in the Junior Ryder Cup in Florida in 2018. Well, who was top scorer for Europe in that edition? It was Rasmus Højgaard. He scored 2.5 points out of 3, won his singles. And then the other kind of big thing, one of Luke Donald's assistants is Thomas Bjorn. And if anyone's going to be sort of shouting the case for the Højgaard, it's Thomas Bjorn, isn't it? I mean, he just can't, and rightly so. I mean, he's been onto these 2 young lads, you know, since they were really coming through, championing their course, saying what amazing players they are. And I don't know. It's like, do they come as a pair? If you've got 10 picks locked in, do you think, well, I'll tell you what, I'll go with the Højgaards? Because I think you do need to start thinking about the next generation of players, and those two could be Ryder Cup stalwarts for years and years, so why not blood them right now? And 2-1, you know, I'd back both of them at 2-1, but I think particularly for me, Rasmus has got that extra something about him, the X factor that maybe you just need. Now, I don't know whether Matt's going to come in and tell me about his injury, possibly, which has affected him. But, you know, it's August today, isn't it? But we've got 2 months. I mean, he was meant to be injured when he won the Made in Himmerland, and he won that. So it's a sort of, you know, they could nurse him a little bit, play him 3 times. But, yeah, Rasmus Højgaard for Europe would be my sort of wild card.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, I mean, the injury is a bit of a problem, but like you say, there's a good 7 weeks between now and then. But I think they make the decision in late August, early September. So they, you know, you never know. They could pick Rasmus and put Nicolai on the as a substitute. So that, but what I was actually going to say was, there's a really weird trend of twins in European golf at the moment. So not only are the Højgaards, Yannick Paul, who is possibly going to make the team, he's a twin, and then in actual fact, the European Solheim Cup team, Leona Maguire is a twin, and Céline Boutier, who won the Evian Championship and will play the Solheim, she's a twin as well. The strange thing with Céline Boutier is her twin sister has never played golf and has no interest in it whatsoever. I always used to like to imagine Leona and her sister, Lisa, who is now an agent. I always used to like to imagine that Lisa dropped out of the game. I always used to imagine that if you're identical twins, you might want to spend a lot of time together. And if one of them wasn't quite good as the other at golf, if you played in the amateur game, you could just swap personalities every now and again and just keep yourselves up the leaderboard. I think there's a real possibility for that happening. I really like Rasmus Højgaard. I think Dave makes a really good case for him. The fellow I was going to discuss is Adrian Meronk. I was very impressed with Sepp Straka, I have to say, at the Open. And it did occur to me that Aaron Rye is 25-1 to make the European Ryder Cup team. And if he wins this week at the Wyndham, that could change very swiftly, because it's quite interesting. Data Golf, who are one of the leading sort of stats people in golf, they had him as one of their 4 picks a couple of weeks ago when they highlighted. So it might be that he's far closer to the team than that suggests. Because remember, Eduardo Molinari is part of Luke Donald's vice captaincy team, and he's a big stats man. So if he's on the same lines as Data Golf, that's quite interesting. But to return to Adrian Morong, the pole's been in pole position, terrible pun, for a long time, and I wasn't planning that. I literally just said it out loud. He's a three-time winner in the last 12 months, and really impressive wins as well. The Irish Open, then the Australian Open, and then actually the Italian Open at Marco Simone. We were discussing earlier about what this golf course needs, Marco Simone, and I remember what I was on this podcast with Ben Coley early this year, and we were discussing Adrian Morong, and both picked him for the Italian Open because I think this golf course suits strong drivers. Long helps, but just strong drivers, and Adrian Morong is exactly that. I also think it really helps, and he's also finished second at Marco Simone, by the way, so it's not just a one-off. I think it also helps that he held the winning putt at the Hero Cup, not because I think that one moment proved that he was special, but he didn't have the best Hero Cup. He did okay, but he never quite got the points that he maybe deserved, but he kept going at it, and then he did hold that putt in quite impressive style. So I think it shows a certain amount of resilience and stamina in that kind of environment. So I'd like to see him there. I think he's worked really hard for it this year. The only thing I would say about him is he probably needs those 3 weeks just before the end of August just to prove that he's still in the good form that he had through the first 6 months of the year. But I think he's in a good position.
Yeah, he's in a great position from the odds as well, 7-4 on Adrian Morong. And you'd have to think, if you pick both Højgaards, you might be wasting it, because just take both, only name one, and if one's having a bad time, who's going to tell him otherwise? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's very, only Thomas Bjorn can identify, and they're probably going to listen to Thomas Bjorn, because how well did he do in Paris? So interesting point there, but maybe don't waste him, but take them both. There you go. Okay, so that's another two added to our European team, which takes us to the opposition, America, the USA. Who are they, do you think? Who do you think they'll do well to pick as one of their wildcard picks, Dave Tindall?
Yeah, the one I looked at in the betting, you've obviously got some crazy short prices who are locks. And then you've got that doubt over Justin Thomas. But even money, I think Keegan Bradley's got to be worth a shout. I mean, he's a two-time winner this season. One of those was Zozo in Japan, which shows he can win outside of the confines of the United States. If you look down the FedEx Cup rankings now as we speak ahead of the Wyndham, he's the fifth highest American. You know, he's ahead of the likes of Fowler, Finau, Cantlay, Schauffele, Morikawa. So, you know, on merit, he is where he is. And obviously, it's a while ago now, but I was lucky enough to go to Medina in 2012. And although Europe's incredible fight back, the miracle of Medina is the thing we all talk about, I think it's forgotten how well Keegan Bradley played in that tournament for the first few days alongside Mickelson. Won three of his games. He actually finished the week a joint top American point scorer. So if you can find him a partner, he does really work well in tandem. Played again in 2014 at Glen Eagles. He only got a point, but maybe his form wasn't as good. In 2012, it was only a year on since he won the USPGA. But I think another good thing for him is a few seasons ago, you had to scroll forever to find him in the strokes game putting stats. He was, I think in back-to-back years, he was 185th and then 186th, 2020, 2019. So really, that's not what you want for a Ryder Cup player. But he's 18th in strokes gained putting this season. So a two-time winner who puts well with experience, it clearly gelled well on that American team. I know they lost in 2012. And if he has one more good week in the playoffs, I mean, he's only won three starts ago, but say he has a big week in the playoffs, I don't see how Zach Johnson could ignore him, really. So, yeah, Keegan Bradley, even money would be my pick of those sort of hovering around that last pick or last two picks sort of area.
Yeah, great stuff. Well, I'm going to have a little look at Cam Young. He's 8-11 to make the team. We had an interesting email from @ScottyChef88.
What a guest.
This could be fantastic. The world number one messaging us. If it is the world number one not hiding his personality or his character very well, Cam Young had better be worried, because this might be a hint that Scotty Scheffler won't be very content with being put with Cam Young, because he says, short game, bad course fit, out of form. Absolutely dissing the chances of his fellow American there. it's an interesting one, Cam Young. He's a complete boom or bust golfer. Like, he's played 10 majors. Four of them are top 10s, five are missed cuts. And his form, last 10, two top 10s, seven times outside the top 50. I mean, he's a guy whose A game is sensational, and his B game, C game, D game doesn't seem to exist. It's like there's an E game after it. I slightly disagree with Scottie Scheffler. You know, I'm going up against the possible world number one and saying I don't think he's necessarily a bad course fit, because I think this is a strong driver's course, and Cam Young is a decent driver. The weakness and the reason why he's not won yet and hasn't quite polished off a major is that his putting's not great. But I think there's every chance that I think he'd have to show something in the next few weeks. But I don't think he's out of the reckoning when it comes to getting a pick. That would be my take on that. I would go against the potential possible world number one.
Imagine if we then go to Cam Young's Twitter page and he thinks that was Scottie Scheffler, and then he comes back with, "Well, you can't putt, mate." So, you know.
Yeah, at Cam Young comes back and says, "I wouldn't pick Scottie if he hadn't already qualified."
Chaos in the American camp. They're fighting amongst themselves.
That's the headline. We're starting this. It's a burner account. And Boyle Sports agree with you, Matt. Like, he is 11-8 on Cam Young. Needs probably a few good weeks, because Finau and Morikawa just ahead of him, and just behind him you've got Thomas and Bradley, so it's all very close, and one that I've got my eye on is Sam Burns, because he's obviously got a good chance this week, and if he does well, and he's obviously got a bit of match player pedigree as well. So it'll be very interesting to see how he goes at the 3-1 mark. But that's it for this week, sadly.
Quickly on Cam Young, would you say that he brings much energy to that dressing room?
That's
a bit of a low-key kind of guy.
I think that's a really good point, actually. And that reminds me of Thomas Bjorn's captain's picks, 5 years ago. I can remember being at the Sky Studios, actually, when Thomas made them. And he caused a bit of controversy, because he didn't pick Matt Wallace, who, of course, was in sensational form, and copped a lot of flack for that. But I can remember being really, really impressed with just the rationale that Thomas Bjorn brought to it. And he picked three guys who he said, when they go in the team room, they bring a lot of energy. They'll up the performance of everybody else. And that also reminds me of something Atha Harimunov, who's been a Solheim Cup performer down the years. She once said to me that actually the points you score literally on the scoreboard, they're kind of not entirely indicative of what you bring to the team, because if you take something into the team room that improves the performance of those around you, you've almost gained those points as well. And that's something that only people who've been in the team room and seeing golfers and how they react around other people, those are the subtle differences that we won't be quite as aware of. We suspect Cam Young might not be that kind of person. I think captains will be thinking that kind of thing. Really good point, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Matt Wallace, well brought in, Matt. I mentioned last week that he was very close. Turns out he listens to the show, messaged me and said, "Don't count me out just yet this week." Genuinely true on Instagram. So he's going to have a big few weeks and getting back in contention. He's someone who we've done plenty of videos with him and mainly pranks around him, who brings great energy and vibe to the locker room. So one to keep an eye on, because he is playing the next few weeks over in America and starting to find some form. So glad you're listening, Matt. Fantastic news all around. Well, yes, that is it for this week on The Tips. Just before we say goodbye and thank Dave and Matt for all of their hard work and just letting us get into the mind of two brilliant writers who feature on The Guardian, it's time for a little recap on their picks for the Wyndham Championship and the wildcard selections around the Ryder Cup. Okay, starting with Matt Cooper. He opened up with Taylor Moore and Taylor Pendrith as his main outright picks for the Wyndham Championship, and added in Chris Kirk, Aaron Rye and Cam Davies. And then looking towards the Ryder Cup, he had Adrian Moronk for Team Europe and Cameron Young for the USA as his wildcard picks. Dave Tindall went with JT Poston and Chesson Hadley as his main picks in the Wyndham, and then added on Russell Henley, Brendan Todd, and Eric Cole as his extras. And looking at the Ryder Cup wildcard selections, he's gone for Rasmus Højgaard for Team Europe and Keegan Bradley for the Americans. Thank you, Dave and Matt, for joining. Let's come to you first, Dave. Can you just remind people where they can find you on social media? So when they've got more questions, or just want to thank you for finding winners, where they can get in touch.
Yeah, I'm at Dave Tindall Golf. Fairly easy one to remember on Twitter. Yeah, so ask me away. I'm always very nice to people on Twitter. It's the way to be.
Perfect. And Matt, can we have your proper one, not your Scott Chef Burner account, please?
Yes, I'm at Matt Cooper Golf. So as straightforward as Dave. And yes, feel free to come and join. I'm only a couple away from 10,000 followers, actually. So you could be my 10,000 follower. Maybe there'll be a prize. I don't know.
Oh, there might be a prize. Well, we look forward to that. 10,000 followers is up there with Scott Chef. So well done to you both. Well, thank you very much and look forward to catching up with you next time you're on. And to the listeners, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and make sure you join in next time on The Tips, where we'll be looking back at this, hopefully having found a winner, and we will be previewing the FedEx St. Jude Invitational.